Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
And welcome to this Friday edition of Catholic Answers Live, broadcasting today on location from the Los Angeles Religious Education Congress, the largest regular gathering of Catholics in the United States. 15,000 young people have already come through for Youth Day here at the Anaheim Convention Center, across the street from Disneyland, and about 40,000 are expected throughout the weekend. This massive event is sponsored each year by the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. We are broadcasting from the EWTN facilities here, and we're very grateful for their generosity in making that possible. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and our topic this hour is misconceptions about abortion. If you have questions about how to think and dialogue clearly about abortion, we welcome your call today. Probably the most heated topic of our era, and one that is surrounded still by confusion, and in some cases, maybe many cases, outright deception. If you would like some clarity on this difficult topic, 888-318-7884 is our number. That's 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour is from right around here, actually, originally from Pasadena, just up the freeway. Father Sebastian Walsh is a Norbertine canon of the Abbey of St. Michael in the Diocese of Orange, California, where he is a professor of philosophy for the seminary program. After completing his studies at Thomas Aquinas College here in California, he continued studies at the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C., receiving a license in philosophy. Later, he attended the Pontifical University of St. Thomas in Rome. That's the Angelicum, where he received a master's in sacred theology and a doctorate in philosophy. Father Sebastian Walsh, thank you for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me, Cy.
And maybe you could tell us a little bit about what a Norbertine is, or what's the life of a Norbertine like in a monastery?
Oh, gosh. Well, briefly, our order was founded by St. Norbert on 1121, Christmas Day. And the purpose of our life was essentially a kind of a clerical reform movement. And the idea was to bring priests together to pray, to form an apostolic life the way the first apostles had, a life in common centered around the Eucharist, the breaking of the bread as we read in the Acts of the Apostles, following the rule of St. Augustine. Our particular abbey has as one of its primary apostolates education, especially we have a boarding school at the abbey, so we teach high school students, but also college-level students and other forms of education.
So you're a little bit products of the 12th century Renaissance there, where there was a great deal of reform going on
exactly.
In the church during that period.
It was about
especially of clergy, right?
It was following upon the reform initiated by Pope St. Gregory VII. He died in 1075. Then you had this great Cistercian and Norbertine revival reform there, St. Bernard of Clairvaux and with the Cistercians, and then St. Norbert with our order. Eventually, that bore fruit with the Dominicans and the Franciscans and the Carmelites as well, and that large flowering of religious life.
Right, so extraordinary time in the life of the church.
Truly beautiful. I pray that will come again. I pray that will come again.
I guess we can all pray for that, Father. It seems that these might be the times where that's needed.
Yes, absolutely. Maybe
we might even say a new evangelization is needed.
Yeah,
I just coined that.
Is that right?
Yeah, I just came up
with
that.
Catchy. It's catchy.
Yeah, I think maybe. I hope that catches on.
Maybe copyrighted or something.
Yeah, we'll see. So our topic today is misconceptions about abortion. Again, the number 888-318-7884. We're happy to take your calls. 888-318-7884. Do you have in your own mind, Father, a kind of maybe a list of misconceptions or that are common about abortion?
As a priest, I find that very often I get different questions, and there's four or five different misconceptions that I often run into. So I thought I might run through each of them and then maybe open it up to calls, and the callers can also maybe ask some questions about other different aspects of abortion.
Okay.
The first misconception that I often run into is the following. This is a controversy between being against abortion and being pro-choice. They characterize those who are in favor of abortion as pro-choice. And I think that's a misconception, because you have to ask yourself a simple question. What are you sacrificing for that one choice when you have an abortion, when someone has an abortion? What's happening is that millions of other beautiful choices are being snuffed out. So you have the choice of a little child to love its mother or father for the first time. Its choice, you know, to marry or to become religious. Its choice to worship God. Its choice to find a career. You know, a young woman wants to be a mother, or maybe she wants to be a doctor, or she wants to be a lawyer. All those choices, those millions of beautiful choices, get snuffed out by a single violent, brutal, and frankly ugly choice. And so to say that abortion is pro-choice is actually the exact opposite of what it is, because it's about the choices of the child that is meant to be. Huh? So if you're really pro-choice, you should be pro-life.
Amen. I'm with you so far, Father.
So there's one misconception that I find often that's out there.
Right, right.
Another misconception that I often see is the idea that abortion is needed for a woman's dignity, you know, for her women's rights, women's liberty, things like that. And I'll say simply, women are not ennobled by treating their greatest gift as a curse and a burden. Women are not ennobled, right? The ability to bring new life into the world is something very beautiful, very sacred, very precious. And to treat that as a burden and a curse is not dignifying, ennobling, freeing women. I have a very close friend of mine. In fact, he's going to come out this very weekend. He's going to see me. He lives out on the East Coast. And I remember he told me a story right after his wife gave birth to their first child. He said he never had more respect and admiration for his wife than the day he saw her give birth. You know, he saw the suffering she went through to give life to their child. And he said his heart was just filled with an utter admiration and respect. You know, and I have a question for all those women out there who have had an abortion or who are contemplating abortion or who are in favor of abortion. Do you think abortion has made men respect you more?
Wow. That's,
you know? Yeah.
I think. Right. But Father, you know, part of your, if I may just interject here and ask you a question. Part of your studies in philosophy have to do with the dignity of a human being.
Yes, that's right.
And isn't there some way in which it's almost an inhuman kind of dignity to say it's disconnected from your womanhood or your manhood? So
yes.
That there's a kind of sick view of, well, we're only really respecting the dignity of a woman when her womanhood is the one thing we won't accept about her.
Yeah, you know, that's one of my biggest problems with modern American feminism. And that is, they assume, American feminists assume that women are inferior to men. And how do I know that? Because they want to turn all women into men.
Oh, yes.
They want to make women like men in every way.
Right.
And that's assuming that men are better than women. You know, and I think to myself, you know, heaven's sakes, they want to imitate the worst qualities of men. They want women to be aggressive. They want them to dress like men. They want them to, you know, to be out of the house and, you know, interacting with the world and using bad language. I don't know what else this is, but I don't see that as having a dignified view of women when you're spending your whole life trying to be like a man. And this whole, you know, modern American feminism adversarial model between men and women, that can't go on. We need a cooperative, collaborative model of the relationship between men and women. Otherwise, our species will not continue, okay?
Right.
We need that. And I think it's ironic that a lot of the icons of modern American feminism come from broken marriages, or they have husbands that they're enabling their prevarications and they're womanizing. A lot of the icons have this exact form of relationship with their own husbands. And that tells me there's something really wrong here. They're not really bringing about what women want in the world. Women want to be in relationships with men that are satisfying. They want men who love, cherish, and will protect them. They want to be in that relationship in a way where they're collaborating to bring about new life, in a way where they're respected and their minds are respected. That's the kind of, a feminism we need in the world today, not this, you know, modern American stuff, you know. And
amen.
Abortion, you know, men, when abortion is available, men treat women like chattel. You know, you're just
we
an object
of pleasure.
We see
that every day.
Because
the evidence of it is everywhere every day.
I can throw you away and you have the abortion.
Right.
You take care of the problem.
Yep.
That's how men treat women when abortion is widespread. So I think that's another misconception, you know. A third misconception is the idea that abortion is a political matter rather than a religious matter, or that it's a religious matter and not a political matter or whatever, right? The truth of the matter is lots of things are both political and religious. Look at the Ten Commandments. You shall not kill, right? You shall not steal. There are laws about that, right? And when it comes down to it, abortion is not just a political thing that we should not talk about in the churches. It's about the heart of our religion. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. It's very simple. You know, and if I said to someone, you know, sometimes I preach this in the church, I'll say, what if I just locked the doors of the church today and I said, 1/3 of you in the next 9 months will be killed unless everyone votes pro-life in this church. How would you vote? And when it comes down to loving your neighbor as yourself, suddenly people realize it's not just a political matter. It's about the essence, the heart of our own faith. And sometimes religious matters and political matters coincide.
Right.
So there you go. Those are a few misconceptions at this point.
Well, we've already got calls piling up here, Father. 888-318-7884 is the number. If you would like to speak with Father Sebastian Walsh about any of the misconceptions about abortion, we'll take a quick break right now, and we'll be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Is it possible to know when life begins? Shouldn't women be able to control their own bodies? What if a pregnant woman's life is in danger? In 20 Answers Abortion, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more. You'll deepen your understanding of this critical moral issue and gain the knowledge you need to explain it to others. 20 Answers Abortion is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Mark 10, the Pharisees asked Jesus if he thought it lawful for a husband to divorce his wife, since Moses permitted divorce. Jesus responded that Moses allowed it only because of the hardness of their hearts, but from the beginning it was not so. The man and the woman become one flesh when they become husband and wife. Fortunate are those of us who have grown up under the influence of such a one flesh union. It is real and it is powerful because it has God Himself as its source and as its bond. He is with them when they sacrifice for Him, for each other, and for their children. No two people can have a greater influence on the next generation than the parents of the members of that generation. They teach by the oblation of their marital union that they offer daily to God. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Norbertine Father Sebastian Walsh is our guest this hour on Catholic Answers Live. Our topic, misconceptions about abortion. And Father, when we went to the break, you had gone through three of what you think are four common misconceptions about abortion. And so we want to get to the fourth before we go to calls, but we'll go to calls real quick after that. 888-318-7884 is the number. That's 888-318-7884. Father, misconception number four.
Yes. The fourth misconception, and this is in some ways it's a very understandable one based upon how people are taught in the culture. They'll often refer to abortion as being necessary for health care. Abortion is a part of health care. That's an argument that's been made for decades now. And I like to point out something very simple. If abortion is health care, then pregnancy is an illness.
Yes, right, right.
It's a very simple reality you have to be aware of. Now, caring for pregnant women, that's health care.
Right.
Preventing women from having problems with their pregnancies, that's health care. But pregnancy is not an illness. So abortion, whose only aim is to get rid of the child in the womb, to terminate the pregnancy, abortion is not health care. Right? In the Hippocratic Oath, it says you're not supposed to destroy a life. That's not part of health care,
right?
And so it's important to see that. Now, it is true that when a woman becomes pregnant, very often complications can happen, health complications. The solution to those problems is not the abortion of the child, but some other thing. The problem is not that she's pregnant. Pregnancy is a good, healthy, it's a sign of fertility, it's a sign of health. So pregnancy itself is not the problem. It's something else that's the problem, gestational diabetes or some other issue that's ancillary there. So the doctor needs to address those issues to preserve the life of the woman and the child, to maximize both. That's real and authentic health care. It can happen that as a physician, there are very tragic situations where you're going to have to choose between the life of the child or the mother. You can't have both of them die. And in a case like that, the church permits something called the principle of double effect. That doesn't involve an abortion at all. It involves treating the woman in such a way that is likely to result in the death of the child. For example, if a woman is pregnant and she has a very serious cancer, she can receive chemotherapy, even if it would likely result in the death of the child, because you're trying to address a specific issue. If a woman has an ectopic pregnancy, you can remove the fallopian tube, the diseased area, even if it will result in the death of the child. That's not abortion. Abortion is directly attacking the life of the child and treating the child itself as the problem, as the illness. And that is never acceptable. It's never acceptable. And a woman won't live with herself knowing that's how she dealt with it. And when it all comes down to it, is it true that having a child sometimes involves a serious risk to your health and even maybe to your life? Sometimes it does. But I have to say, some things are worth risking your life for. And one of those things is our children. I have to say that. And until we begin to see that, that's fundamentally the essence of the culture of death. The essence of the culture of death is that there's nothing worth giving your life for.
Right. Right. Not marriage in a permanent commitment. Not motherhood or fatherhood. There's nothing that...
That's right.
That has a claim on the totality of your life.
It puts the ego of the individual at the center, and his own individual life is the most important thing. That's the heart of the culture of death, and we need to counteract that. And only when we do people find peace and joy.
Father Sebastian Walsh, Norbertine Father Sebastian Walsh, is our guest this hour on Catholic Answers Live. Our topic, misconceptions about abortion. 888-318-7884 is the number. We go to Kelsey in Ellenwood, Kansas, listening on Ave Maria Radio. Kelsey, thank you for your call. You are on with Father Sebastian Walsh.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, Kelsey.
Hi. So my question or area of guidance I'm looking for today, it has to do with the third misconception you answered, the political misconception.
Yes.
What I have issues with is I am pro-life. Obviously, personally, I would count my friends to be pro-life. But when I pray about it, morally, I feel... conflicted when voting for a pro-life or on pro-life issues, particularly because I feel it's almost immoral to take away somebody else's freedoms or choices.
Yes. Okay, good. Let me ask you a couple different questions. The first one, were you able to hear the first part of the show when I talked about the question of being pro-choice, that misconception?
I believe I was being screened at that time, so I'm not sure I got.
So one of the things that I addressed is the question of whether or not you're really being pro-choice when you're for abortion. When someone commits an abortion, they make one choice, but as a result of that choice, no child will be born. That child will die, and that child's choices, the choice to love its father and mother, the choice of where to go to school, the choice of a vocation, the choice to love God and worship God, all the beautiful choices of that new life are snuffed out. And so if you feel a qualm of conscience about the fact that you're impinging on someone's freedom, remember also there's another person's freedom that's being destroyed, and in a much more radical way by taking their life when they're young. All those beautiful choices and all that freedom, all those beautiful freedoms will be eliminated. And so it's not a matter of taking away someone's freedom for the sake of something else. It's looking at two people's freedoms, but seeing that one of those person's freedoms are radically and forever destroyed, whereas the other one, you're encouraging them and you're even showing them that some choices are bad to make, right? And you think there should be laws against bad things, don't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're not against taking people's freedom away when it comes to making bad choices, for example, harming other people. Is that right?
That makes sense. And yeah. What you just said totally hit home. Like, I'm so sorry if you had to repeat yourself, but as a new mother, you're right. Taking away that choice for that child is so much bigger than the choices that we're talking about, you know.
That's right. I think that's right.
Politically. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Kelsey. God bless you.
Thank you so much for that call, Kelsey. 888-318-7884 is the number. This is Catholic Answers Live, and our topic today, misconceptions about abortion, with our guest, Father Sebastian Walsh. We go now, Father, to Michael in New Orleans, Louisiana, listening on 690 AM. Michael, you are on with Father Sebastian Walsh.
Well, thank you, Father. I heard that you are a Norbertine Father and that you follow the apostles' way of life.
That's right.
I was studying the fifth chapter of Acts,
yes.
And I wanted to know if you agreed with this. I want to talk about abortion in a minute after this question. But
okay.
Whether you agree that they all, the apostles and disciples, all put the whatever monies they made, whether it was $100,000 or $2, in a common pot, which is really socialism or closer to communism. And when one guy tried to hide the money from the pot, a couple named Ananias and Sapphira, God struck him down. And so I was thinking that socialism is really the ultimate goal, where the rich and the poor are all equal.
Michael, this is Sai. I got to just interrupt you real quick, Michael. I'm sorry, but you're going to come right up against the break. You're actually exactly in Father's wheelhouse. This is what he studies and what he knows all about. Maybe you should get to the abortion question for Father, and then he can address both when we come back on the other side. Would that be all right, Father?
That's great.
So why don't you also, Michael, give us the question on abortion? We're clear on the socialism question, which Father is well equipped to answer. What's the abortion question?
Okay, the abortion question is this. Does a poor baby go after he's aborted? And if he goes to heaven, which most Christians believe, although abortion is a horrific act, isn't the fact that he'll live eons and eons, millions and millions of years in glory, and given the child has given up maybe 70 years on this earth, of a lot of times pain and suffering, isn't the bottom line of abortion, even though it's intended to be a negative, like Satan tried when he killed Jesus on the cross? He intended it to be a negative, but at the bottom line, it was a positive.
Okay, Michael, I think we're very, very clear on the questions. You expressed them extremely clearly. Because we are live today for the Religious Ed Conference, I am not exactly sure how much time you have, Father, but why don't you begin? When we hear the music, we'll know we got to take a break, and you can continue on the other side.
Great. So you want me to start with a socialism question first?
You are
great.
In charge here,
okay,
Father.
Okay. So, Michael, I want to mention a few things here about what happened in the Acts of the Apostles. One of them has to do with just a historical question. The question is, was that a requirement for the entire church, or was it something that was practiced by those in Jerusalem specifically? When you read the early church documents, what you realize is that requirement that all of those who are members of the church should sell everything and hold it in common was something that was peculiar to the church of Jerusalem for a reason. The early Christians knew that Jerusalem was going to be destroyed. And therefore, when they sold all things and put them in common, they did that. And in fact, as they got right up close to the destruction of Jerusalem, say the last decade from about the year 60 to the year 70, the church in Jerusalem was deeply impoverished as a result of having followed that practice. So much so that St. Paul, in his epistle to the Corinthians, had to take up a collection for the church in Jerusalem. And I'll say more after the break.
You are listening to Catholic Answers Live. We are broadcasting live today from the Religious Ed Conference here in Los Angeles. 888-318-7884 is the number. Father Sebastian Walsh is our guest, and we'll be right back.
K Catholic Answers Live.
Widely regarded as the premier magazine of Catholic apologetics and evangelization, our award-winning Catholic Answers magazine features the articles you want by the authors you know and respect. Year after year, Catholic Answers magazine has been bringing the very best teachers the Catholic world has to offer into thousands of homes on a regular basis. Top-notch writers like Jimmy Akin, Trent Horn, Mark Brumley, Tim Staples, Carlo Brissard, and Matt Nelson. The list goes on and on. It makes a perfect gift for family and friends, students, priests, and seminarians. Just about anybody you know. And of course, don't forget about a subscription for yourself. Phone 888-291-8000 or go to shop.catholic.com to subscribe today. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here to tell you about my new book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties. Have you ever read something in the Bible that confused you? Or has a skeptic ever asked you to explain a scandalous passage and you didn't know what to say? Doesn't Genesis contradict science? Why does the Bible promote slavery? How could God order his people to kill women and children? It's happened to just about everyone. But now you have a place to turn for the answers. In Hard Sayings, I look at dozens of the most confounding passages in Scripture and offer clear, reasonable, and Catholic keys to unlocking their true meaning. After reading this book, you'll be equipped to answer the toughest questions skeptics ask about the Bible. So don't be left without an answer again. Order your copy of Hard Sayings today by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, broadcasting on location today at the Religious Ed Conference here in Los Angeles. The Los Angeles Religious Ed Conference is probably the largest annual gathering of Catholics anywhere in the United States. We're very grateful and pleased to be able to use the EWTN facilities here at the event today. They're beautiful facilities. Our guest this hour, Father Sebastian Walsh. Father, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
And our topic... Wait, what's our topic, Father? I drew a blank.
Misconceptions about abortion.
I knew. I was looking for the word misconceptions. And did you see that? I drew
a
total
pun. It's
public
a pun.
Blank. Right, that misconceptions about abortion is our topic this hour. 888-318-7884 is the number. But before we went to the break, Michael was asking you two questions, one of which is completely off topic, but that was the apostolic practice of sharing all things in common a teaching that should lead to socialism, which you are addressed and said, no, because it was for a particular time and place, and it actually didn't work out for the apostles.
That's right. Okay. So I was in the middle of responding to that particular question about whether or not the apostolic church, as it was in Jerusalem, was the mandatory model for the entire church and what Jesus wanted as a mandatory model for the whole church. And I pointed out that there were particular historical circumstances, namely the imminent destruction of Jerusalem, that made the Christians that lived there realize that we're not going to be able to keep our property here as it is. So they sold everything, they kept it in common, and as a result, they were greatly impoverished when they got close to the time of the destruction of Jerusalem, the last 10 years. St. Paul, again, in I think it's 2 Corinthians 9, he's taking up a collection for the church in Jerusalem because they're so impoverished now from the other churches. So that's going to be one thing to realize, that this was not a mandatory church-wide prescript of Christ to the apostles. It was limited, and it also had some very, you know, difficult effects as a result of it. Now, the second question is such a thing as a voluntary thing possible? Well, in the history of the church and the tradition of the church, what we found is that among celibates, this is possible. You can't do it when you have a family, because when you have a family, you're going to have some private property to care for them. Socialism says private property is wrong and evil. The Catholic Church says voluntary poverty is good and possible, but it's not mandatory, it's a counsel, and private property is good and holy as well. There's a radical difference between socialism,
right,
and the Church's teaching about voluntary poverty. I live voluntary poverty. I've given up everything. I've given up my right to own anything. And all the earnings I make in my entire life go to the Abbey, and we live that apostolic way of life. but I don't have to care for a family. I care for my religious family, and my work and all my things contribute to that. So that's one side. So the church and its doctrine does not lead to socialism. Socialism is a materialist, atheistic view of the world, of reality, that treats private property as evil. The Catholic view of common goods and things held in common has to do fundamentally with the idea that we love God above all things, and therefore we're willing to sacrifice, if necessary, any material good for that sake. So there's one side. Now let me address the other question, which was a question regarding abortion. I believe, if I understand correctly, the question was, well, what happens to a child when it's aborted? And the assumed answer was the child goes to heaven and has eternal glory in heaven. Therefore, it seems that abortion turns out good, and therefore you might as well, it seems, you know, why not let it happen, because it's going to turn out something very good, and it's going to save a lot of suffering and evil for the child over the course of their whole life. So better to let them be aborted and no harm, no foul, as we say in basketball or something, you know. Okay, so the first thing. It's not true that we know for a fact that an aborted child goes to heaven. The Catholic Church and the Catechism simply says we don't have revelation about it. We entrust them to the mercy of God. It's quite possible, but we don't have a revelation about it. All we know is that when a child's born, we have an obligation to baptize them, and that baptism is necessary for their salvation when they're born. We don't know the answer, what happens to a child when it's aborted. We just don't know the answer, and the church has never defined that. Therefore, we can't assume from the beginning that a child will go to heaven from the moment it's baptized. Now, it could go to, there's theological opinions about this, it could go to what theologians have called limbo, which would be kind of a place of natural happiness, but you wouldn't see the beatific vision, you wouldn't have the glory of heaven, and so forth. So that's one point just to make. A second point, you can never do evil that good may come of it. I might think to myself, you know what? I'm baptizing this child. I'm a priest. I'm going to baptize this child here. I might as well hold it underwater on the last time. That way it'll go straight to heaven. I can't do evil that good may come of it, right? It's not in my decision to decide when someone lives and dies. That's God's decision, not mine. So you could never justify abortion, even if you knew that the child was going to go to heaven. That would never justify abortion, because you would still be doing something wrong. God may bring good out of evil, but you're still responsible for the evil and you'll be punished for it. Third, I have one, the last thing you'd have to say there, and that is, why is it that it's better to let a child live and live a lifelong, maybe a life of suffering for 70 years, rather than just have them die right at the beginning if they're going to go straight to heaven? Well, the answer is because they'll have greater glory in heaven, and they'll bring about the kingdom of God on earth in the meantime. And therefore, we shouldn't just, you know, snuff out a life at the beginning when God intends to use that life for the salvation of others and to attain further and greater glory for itself in heaven for all eternity, right? With every child comes the hope of salvation, not only for itself, but for others. St. Paul was so insistent on that. He said in his epistle to Timothy, a woman shall be saved through giving birth. A startling statement, huh? A startling statement.
Indeed. Thank you, Michael, for those questions. We go now to Rachel in Katy, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Rachel, you are on with Father Sebastian Walsh.
Yes. Yes. Hi. Thank you. Good afternoon, Father Sebastian.
Hi, Rachel.
I was calling to ask a question about how would you address someone who constantly says that they are not pro-choice, that they're pro-life,
yes.
But they believe with all their heart that that decision still resides with the mother, and that decision is between them and God. So they say that they're pro-life, but they still believe that that decision belongs with the mother, and that is between them and God.
Yes. Okay. Let me make a few ask a few other questions that you might be able to ask that person. So one of the factors that needs to be taken into consideration is the fact that another person is involved here, right, with regard to abortion. If someone were to say to you, you know what, I am against rape, but when a man decides in the conscience, in the sanctuary of his conscience that he needs to rape someone, I can't stand it. That's a decision he has to make between him and God. or someone says in the sanctuary of his conscience, I have to kill someone and murder someone, and you say, well, that's between him and God. Of course we don't think those things are true because another person is being hurt, right? So if you are pro-life, and presumably you're pro-life because you think that that child in the womb is not just, you know, a piece of the uterus, but it's actually an independent person, a human being, if that's what you are, then obviously to be consistent with the way in which you treat other people, you ought to realize that it's not just a matter between an individual and God when it comes to making choices that gravely harm other people. So that's one way to respond to that. A second way to respond to it is this. Even if someone were to hold the position that you don't have another person there, it's not another person, it's just a blob of tissue or whatever, whatever you want to say. Even if someone were to hold that position, and if they did, I don't know why they would be pro-life in any way, but let's say that's what they held. Huh? Even so, certain actions are wrong even if they only hurt yourself. You know, someone can take drugs, for example, and you don't say, well, I let people take heroin and overdose on heroin and do these bad drugs to themselves, and that's just between them and God. No, there should be laws against people hurting themselves. And bringing a new life into the world, having a child, that is perfective of human nature. And to stop that, to deny something very beautiful and sacred about a woman, namely, that she is perfected and brought to a state of dignity through motherhood, to say that stopping that and rejecting her own motherhood, her own dignity as a woman, her own power of reproduction, which is a gift from God, even if you didn't think a person was there, you'd say you're still harming yourself, and there might be reason for someone to intervene and say, don't harm yourself. Reproduction is common not only to our species, but to all animals and to all living things. You don't interrupt reproduction without serious consequences for the rest of your life. Everything else in your life is tied together with that very fundamental ability to bring new life into the world. And to harm and damage and deny this very fundamental aspect of human nature, even if you didn't believe there was another person there, would be harmful to you. So I give those two reasons. First of all, there is another person there. Secondly, you're even harming yourself. And both of those are good reasons to intervene and not to say this is just your choice and it doesn't matter what you do to yourself or anyone else.
Thank you, Rachel, for that call. Catholic Answers Live broadcasting on location today at the Religious Ed Conference here in Los Angeles. Father Sebastian Walsh is our guest. We're tackling misconceptions about abortion. More calls when we come back right after this.
Hello, everyone. This is country music artist Colin Ray. Do what I do and keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
With so many choices, you may ask yourself, why buy from Catholic Answers? Here are a couple of pretty good reasons. By purchasing directly from us, you support the ministry as a whole, including the ability to produce new products and to pursue our apostolic projects. You're buying from a name you can trust. All of the products we carry are reviewed by our apologists to ensure they are faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church. Your purchases help make all of our work possible. We look forward to seeing you online at Catholic.com.
Do you want to end abortion? Halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
It may be true for you, but not for me. How often have you heard this during a discussion with friends or family? Whether talking about faith, morality, politics, or just the basic notion of truth, so many people are captive to the notion of relativism, the belief that reality is something we decide. In his new audio presentation, Your Truth, My Truth, apologist Carlo Broussard breaks down this intellectual cancer, looking at the different kinds of relativism we regularly encounter, and demonstrating how, ultimately, they collapse under the weight of their own incoherence. More importantly,
Carlo makes a powerful case for the existence of objective truth, showing you how to explain to others that right and wrong are both real and universal, because it was designed that way by God. Order your copy of Your Truth, My Truth by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Father Sebastian Walsh is here this hour taking your calls on misconceptions about abortion as Catholic Answers Live gets to kind of take over the EWTN radio booth here for a couple hours. Thank you very much to everybody at EWTN for that opportunity. We'll go right back to calls, Father. John in Des Moines, Iowa, listening on Iowa Catholic Radio. John, you are on with Father Sebastian Walsh.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing, John.
So my question is this. I'm a medical student, and when I have arguments with people about abortion, we can come to the consensus that, as science says, the fetus is alive from the moment of conception. Yes. However, what I'm told is that personhood isn't the same thing as being alive, and we need to wait for personhood at whatever point that comes along.
Yes.
Or for the full rights and dignity of the child to be taken into account.
Yes.
What would you say to that, Father?
That's an excellent question. It's true that it's difficult to see, and this is an area where you have to be able to have some patience with people and not just sort of beat them over the head. It's difficult to see that a newly conceived child is at the same time a human person. One of the mistakes that people make is they think that you're not a person unless you can actually do the activities a rational, full-grown human being can do. But if you take that position, then you're reduced to the situation that sleeping people are not persons, that people who are handicapped, for example, or in a coma are not persons, that people, newborn babies, the first couple years are not persons. Huh? If you demand full, actual reasoning capability, you're going to exclude a lot of people who are obviously people. Huh? So what you have to look for, rather than the ability to actually carry out these activities, is whether or not it's there in principle at the beginning, right? Is it there in principle? The man who's in a coma, for example, even though he can't actually sit up and talk to you, you see that that person has within himself that human nature that's capable of those things, even if he can't, you know, actually wake up and do the things he's supposed to do as a fully rational human person, huh? And therefore, what do we look to? The first thing we see is that from the moment of conception, we have the entire complement of DNA. It's all there, and at that point, there's just cell division and development, huh? You may not have all the explicit organs, right? But for that matter, the organs aren't completely developed until later on after birth. You know, a lot of growth and development still goes on, right? So that's one thing. Here's another thing, and this is something to think about. Growing into a mature human being is a properly human activity. It is the activity of a person. And that growth begins from the moment of conception without any interruption. It's not that when you look at embryology, it's not that I have, you know, one kind of animal like a plant at the beginning, then I've got an animal that's not human at the next stage, and then I finally get a human being. There is a completely continuous growth towards full mature person, but you can't give what you don't have. And therefore, personhood must have been possessed in principle at the beginning in order to give throughout the growth process that full development that comes about as a result of the development. What the mother's providing is just nutrition. She's not providing new data, so to speak, or new organs. She's simply providing nutrition to the child from the moment of conception onward. And so I think that's the strongest evidence that from the beginning you have a person. Now, if you're a Catholic in particular, then you have the faith to help you in this as well. You know, it says in Jeremiah, from the beginning, from the womb, before you were formed, I knew you, right? The Virgin Mary, we confess, is conceived without original sin at the Immaculate Conception, which is a sign that she must have been a person at the moment of her conception and so forth. But even without the Catholic faith, I think you could make a very strong argument that there's personhood from the beginning. And even if you don't know, it seems to me, if someone asks you the question, what if I've got a red button there, and if I push the button, I'm not sure if I'm going to kill someone. The fact that you have a doubt, does that mean you get to push the button? You assume personhood for lack of demonstrative evidence to the contrary. Huh? So those are all things you can say. Maybe the last thing I would say is the point that I made in response to the last caller, and that is, even if you could demonstrate it wasn't a person at the very early stages, and you can't, but let's say you could, it's still wrong to try and frustrate the reproductive act, to frustrate something that's a perfection of human nature, right? It's not just about a person, but it's also about fulfilling human nature of the person who's conceived the child. And that's also wrong. St. Thomas Aquinas didn't think he was a person until the first 40 to 80 days. He still thought it was a serious sin to interrupt the reproductive act based upon the fact that it's frustrating the perfection of human nature and therefore incompatible with human happiness. So there you go. Those are some answers to your question.
Does that help you, John?
That does help me very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for that call. We go now to Rosie in San Antonio, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Rosie, you are on with Father Sebastian Walsh.
Yes. Hello, Father.
Hi, Rosie.
I just had a question. I was going to ask you, like, what if you have a couple that are in a marriage and, they find out that they're going to have a child.
Yes.
And one of the parents is not, happy about having a child.
Yes.
What does the mother do in that situation? I mean, what?
Yes. That's a very good question. Here's something that happens. I've noticed this in my ministry as a priest. Very often what happens is that when a woman finds out she's expecting, and she's had a child before and she's scared because she knows the different burdens that come as a result of that, very often it can happen that a woman starts to kind of panic and she gets very upset about the prospect of having a new child. And then the husband, seeing that, he starts apologizing and he says, it'll never happen again, and I'm sorry, and this is a mistake. I've seen that happen many times. And then the woman will come to me and she'll say, my husband doesn't even want the child. And he's actually doing that because he thinks that's what his wife wants to hear, right? So sometimes the reason why the husband acts like he doesn't want to have the child is because he thinks that that's what his wife wants to hear. So the first thing is to say, okay, if you're a husband out there, don't do that. Don't do that to your wife. Let's say it happens, though, that the husband legitimately doesn't want to have the child. He says, I don't want it for whatever reason. He's angry. He's upset, whatever else. Maybe he'll even threaten divorce. There's lots of things I've heard cases where that would happen. Huh? In those cases, there are different options. But one of the options is not abortion. The first thing that I like to point out is that often we have an experience in human life that at first we do not like a responsibility that comes before us. But once we've got over the initial shock and we learn to deal with it, we actually realize that God has actually given us one of the greatest gifts in our lives. Many times I've seen a father or a husband who was very angry about his wife conceiving a child. Once the child was born, and once he began to know and love the child, he couldn't believe that he ever wanted the child not to be, right? And that's, first of all, give the husband a chance. Give him a chance to love his own child. We make mistakes all the time based upon negative emotions and first reactions, knee-jerk reactions. So he needs to be given a chance to love his child. Let's say, even though that happens, the husband still doesn't want the child. Then at least you have the option of adoption. Huh? Abortion is the one thing you can't do. And I guarantee you, by doing that, the woman will have such resentment in her soul towards her husband that it will destroy the marriage. It'll destroy the marriage. One of the primary reasons you're together is to bring new life in the world and to raise those children together. And so when you strike at that, you're striking the very heart of your own married life and your relationship as a husband and wife. Does that help?
Yes, Father. It's just very difficult, I feel for the mother that,
It is very difficult. And offer all the help you can to that woman. If you know that woman, offer the help you can. And I encourage all those who are listening to be very sensitive to the needs of pregnant women and to help and assist them and pray for them. Okay, let's all pray for them.
Thank you so much, Rosie. Father Sebastian Walsh is our guest today on Catholic Answers Live. We are live and on location at the Los Angeles Religious Ed Conference at using the facilities of EWTN. Father, we go now to Bob in Arlington, Texas, also listening on Guadalupe Radio. Bob, you are on with Father Sebastian Walsh.
Thank you very much. How are you, Father Sebastian?
I'm doing well, Bob. Thank you.
I've got a question that it's been on my mind for some time, and I knew of a situation that it happened, and it was kind of distressing, but I wanted to ask what the church position is where a woman is, like, in her third trimester.
Yes.
And she finds out that she has a high-risk pregnancy that...
Yes.
If she goes along with the birth of the child, she's risking her life and quite possibly the child as well.
Yes. So what would you do in a case like that? What does the church say about that?
Yes, sir. The church, yes.
Well, the first thing that you do is that you try and find adequate medical help, right? We live in a time and a place when medicine is more advanced than it's ever been. And so the first thing is to try everything you can to get good medical help to make it possible to bring that child to birth with the minimum amount of risk to the woman. You know, there might be a cesarean section involved. There might be other things that are involved. You might have to try and deliver the child early. There are many things like that, certain treatments. But even if it came to the point where you realized, well, when all's said and done, there's going to be a risk and a danger. You know, I know of a case of a woman who had a heart condition, and just the trauma of giving birth, even having cesarean section, would have been a very difficult thing and a risk to her life, huh? In a case like that, I reiterate something I said at the beginning of the show, and that is, we all have to admit there's some things worth giving your life for. Not just risking your life for, but giving your life for. You know, when a young man goes to defend his country, and he knows there's a good chance that he's going to die, that, you know, that he may not come back alive, we don't say to him, well, turn around and run. Don't face the enemy. That's because your country is something worth giving your life for. And similarly, our children is something worth risking our life for, certainly, and even giving our life for. A woman can die in peace if she knows she died giving life to her child. But if she takes the life of her own child, she'll have that in her soul for the rest of her life. And that's a much greater evil that she would have to face than death itself. We as Christians, as Catholics, we believe in the resurrection, we believe in the life to come, and we know sometimes we face decisions that involve pain and suffering of this world.
Thank you very much, Bob, for that call. Thank you so much for being with us today, Father Sebastian Walsh.
My pleasure.
May we have your blessing before we go out today.
Per intercessionem Beata Maria Virginis et Omnem Sanctorum, benedictio de omnipotentis Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti descendat super vos et mani et semper. Amen.
Amen. And next hour, Dr. Pia Cellini here, the topic will be, is conscience king? Well, we hear a lot about conscience, but what does it mean? And is the conscience the king of our life, or is there a higher king even than that? Thanks for joining us today on Catholic Answers Live. We'll be right back after this.